kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We are creeping up on episode 500. We have another reviews episode lined up here. Not going to be a long one. Well, ideally, it's not going to be a long one. You never know when Purnell's here. Purnell, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, though. You got to admit some of the episode length is going to be reduced because I already burned out my buffalo wing Dytra.
There's plenty to talk about. Come on, Purnell. It's you.
That is a good point. That is a very good point.
How was your weekend?
It was actually very nice. I'm still coming down from the vacation high. I was in Orlando, Florida for Dice Tower Con, and it was a fantastic time. Played a lot of board games and ate ridiculously good food and bought a lot of board games. And now I got to pay for all those things on that magic credit card. So, womp womp, eating some old quiet food now, trying to just lose weight plus save money. How many board games did I buy? My dinner is sitting on top of the tower of them right now. That's new kitchen table. Board games. That's my kitchen table.
Really? How many did you get?
Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Holy shit.
Well, admittedly, some of them were in a 11. Admittedly, some 12. Okay, 12. A lot of them were in an actual, like, lot that I got from, like, a silent auction that was for charity.
All right.
And I'm going to tell you something. I get competitive. Don't let me near an auction. It's bad. It's real bad. Especially when I don't have any money because I'm just going to put myself to debt. So I saw a stack of stuff. I was like, you know, the price on this is pretty nice. No one's really bidding on it. And I've always wanted to play this game. It's a board game called Super Dungeon Explorer. It retailed for $100 when it first came out.
Jesus. So
exactly. I'm like, I can't afford that mess. I'm not paying $100 for a board game, just for a board game. So sure enough, they had an auction tower set up there where it was like someone had bought it. It was one of the main versions of the game, plus like four of the expansions, and another game that I hardly care about, but it's in the blind, so whatever, I'll take it. So I bid like $30 on it, because that's where it was at. I was like, that's a steal if I get it for $30. All that content, walk away. And I want to just be kind of relaxed and quiet about it, but unfortunately, I couldn't help but keep looking over to see, is anybody looking at my shit? Who's looking at my shit? Every time somebody pick up a boss, I'm looking at my friends, like, almost scared looking over him. Like, you put that shit down, like whispering it.
Get the fuck away from my fucking game.
Exactly. That's my shit right there. Let it go. And then, of course,
kill a bitch.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was like. It was a fire bubbling. And when you see their arm reach for the pencil, it's like, oh man, it's on now. And then when they walk away, you kind of casually walk up around the back of the auction setup and you walk around to it. And just with your offhand, just reach around the side and just doodle your name again and increase the bid. And then you go like you were never there. And you go sit back down. I just kept doing that. And eventually I walked up there the last time. They were just about to take the sheet as I was writing. I was like, oh, no, you don't give me that. And I wrote it in there. And it was like, wait a minute, you're taking it now? He's like, yeah, like you mean the auction is done? He said, yes. I was like, get that back. Let me erase $5 off this bid. You tell me I won it at this point. Let me reduce my final bid. What's the point of going hard if I don't have to? So,
you dick.
Hey, it's for charity, but I'm poor. All right. So, in the end, they ended up reading it all off, and I ended up winning like two of the auctions up there. One that people ignored, and they should not have because that was a banger of an auction or a bid item they didn't catch on to. And then the one I won, and then I get home and I open the box up. I had no idea what I was getting. It turns out I thought I was just getting the base games. No. I got like a Kickstarter version of every variant in the game.
Oh,
the person
shit.
Who originally owned it sleeved. If you know, sleeving is when you put your card in a little plastic container. They sleeved everything. They bought those like thick plastic like containers to put all the cards in. It is organized as hell and worth way more than what I paid for it. I can tell you right now. Even if I just want the game, I could take all the junk out of the containers and then sell it back to the store, and I made out like a bandit.
That's impressive.
It is. I didn't see it coming. I was like, I got the game. Holy shit. Like, I actually had to post on the internet. I was like, well, I don't know who had this. I don't know who donated this to the auction, but I'm going to take good care of your product because you hooked me up. Thank you. I mean, I paid less for the entire lot than that base game was that I mentioned to you earlier.
Damn, that is crazy, man.
It is crazy. I was geeked up. Still spent too much, though, across the board. And then ordered another board game on the car ride home off of the internet. Because I was scratching. I was fiending. Like, hey, one more game.
You got the
itch. And then I got the solid itch. And of course, it's like that Jerry Seinfeld sketch about when you go out to eat. That's how I was with board games, where while I'm out there, I'm like, more board games. Snap, snap. More games. Purchase. Swipe that card. Damn good. And then you go home and the high's off. And you're just sitting there in your house like, man, that was a nice vacation. Back to real life. And then you start seeing the notifications pop up. Whoa, whoa. Who bought that? Where'd that money come from? What the hell just happened? Where'd all this money, where all these bills come from? Oh, my God. And it's almost like you came out of a fun stupor. You don't know what happened. You went away living like you're on High Street. You come home on bottom ass. Like, ain't cutting it. It's
dazed, confused, strung out in a whole big closet full of board games.
Exactly. Wake up burping up cigarettes. Like, how did I get here, man? What was I sleeping? My head is sleeping. Who the fuck bought Monopoly? What is that doing in my house? I don't even like Monopoly. What is that here? So I don't know, man. You and Guy comes around, man, you were on fire last night. If it had pips and meeples, you were buying. People were chasing you to sell you their games.
Oh, Jesus.
You were on a board game bender.
A board game bender. That's beautiful. That's poetry.
That's debt.
That's debt. Speaking of things that are going to put us in debt, should we talk about some games?
Yes. There it is. There's the other debt booster in my life. Video games.
Video games, yeah. Thankfully, we've only got four to talk about on this episode, so it's not going to be too long of a show. So let's kick things off. You're here to talk about one game that is called Soul Seraph, developed by Ace Team, published by Sega, released July 10th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $14.99. In the beginning, there was only chaos until one day when the Sky Father and Earth Mother drove the chaos away and made the world. They made the stars and the sun and the waters and the land, and then they made the plants and animals, and finally their favorite creation, humankind. When they were done, Sky Father and Earth Mother left the world so it could grow freely on its own. Purnell, I'm guessing this leads into the game?
Yes, it does, though I honestly have nary a clue what makes humans their favorite creation, because humans ain't doing shit. They don't have any cool powers or not.
Humans have boobs.
Touche. Well played, sir.
Yeah.
Well, half of them do. The rest are just kind of there. Like, what are the other half doing? Boobless. That's what
they got. Anyway, balls, and those dangle, and you could play with those as well. They just swing in the breeze. Just
no, balls are horrible. you flick them and you're on the ground, see them with pain. Like, God gave man a Achilles heel, and that is his testicles. It sucks. What? Why are testicles stainless steel?
I don't know. Sega's gonna listen to this, and they're gonna be pissed.
The guy's like, "What the heck? What do you have against our testicles?" Anyway. The actual game.
Yes, I'm Soul sorry. Seraph. I'm sorry, too.
The actual game is honestly pretty cool. So, leading into what you said, basically, it's the vibe I got from it, because I'm terrible with plots. There's like a number of like guys or like high powerful monsters who decide they want to wreak havoc on the Earth itself. So, they essentially release dark clouds all across the land, and mankind is kind of left wondering where the gods have left. Have they been forsaken because their lands are overrun by darkness and they can't do so much as build a farm for themselves? So what happens? You, the sun god Helios, shows up, sent by mom, father, you know, the two gods, the mother and father, to right what's wrong with the planet. And what you end up getting is what I can easily describe immediately as a nice homage to the original game of ActRaiser, of which this game is not related, but shares a lot of qualities with. So the games consist of a scenario where you always choose a place to go on a world map. And when you arrive there for the first time, you get dropped down into a 2D platformer environment. It is pretty much an action stage, I will call them, where you get not too many abilities early on. You can jump, you can double jump, you have a sword attack. You can hold down the slash button to do a charge-up sword attack, which is not only more powerful, but also kind of gives you a bit of a jump think like a very light version of the up and B move in like a Smash Brothers game, where it's like a sort of raising your attack.
Yeah.
Like extra hop. And you also get arrows that you can fire using a mana energy, so to speak. So you pretty much are running through these levels, fighting enemies. Oh, one last, you can also block with a shield button, and you can do like a backstep maneuver. On these levels, you use all these abilities to progress from left to right, sometimes up and down, to kill a variety of monsters, whether they be amphibious, you know, mammalistic, I just made that up, or avian or what have you, insects as well. And sometimes even just flat out monsters, like jelly blobs. But anyway, you fight monsters to get to the end of a level, and you'll either end up fighting something like a cloud, like an eyeball, a cloud with an eyeball, then crack it from Kirby, or just a swarm of different enemies. And when you defeat them, the level's over. You get a health or mana upgrade, which I'll go into in a second, and then you are cast back out into the world. So at that point, you are then presented with the actual world map, like the, I guess like the sim, let's call it the sim world, the sim stage, where you come across a group of surviving humans, and they are having their own personal conversations about the guys and why they've forsaken them. Or one might be, say, for example, one of them might be atheist, and the other's like, you don't understand, child. The guys are wonderful. It's just we have to pray harder or whatever. And then you show up to help, and you help by guiding them in a number of ways. So you're tasked with using your abilities to build homes for people to live in, and then farms with which they can use to grow food and feed your humans, because you need the food for the humans to actually function, and then a variety of other effects. Things that are needed, like it's sort of like a sim in order to for the humans to thrive. You need wood to build environments, so you have to actually build lumber mills near facilities to chop down, or not near facilities, build lumber mills near trees with which to chop down wood, which then can be used to build facilities which people can be placed in to function in. Now, something different from ActRaiser is that, unlike that game, you're not only trying to get the civilization populated, but there's another side goal that takes place in which you need to actually clean the land of darkness. This is done in two ways. One, you have to hold off the enemy advances from reaching the heart of the town, and something that's pretty much like a tower defense game.
Oh, nice.
In addition to the... Yeah, it's pretty cool, honestly. In addition to building the farms and the homes, like I mentioned, you'll also find yourself building archery stations, and which can have guys fire at aerial enemies. And you'll have building barracks, which can have ground troops that can come in and attack enemies as well. The enemies will run down pre-designated lines, so you can actually tell where they're coming from, so you can kind of build in anticipation of them and hold them off. In addition to that, you also have to go and clear out the various darkness hubs that are strewn about the land. You'll know that they're there by seeing a purple dark haze with an eyeball above a hub. You basically have to extend your village's reach far enough out to these environments and place a shrine next to them. Once a shrine is there and you've put a worker in it, or a citizen, whatever you want to call them, they will clear that area of the dark mist, which will allow Helios, you, to descend into the area and purge the area of evil. And when you do that, it becomes another action stage. It could either be something as simple as a quick skirmish in a set environment piece, or a full-on platform stage. And in these stages as well, in addition to just like fighting monsters, you can also occasionally find upgrades to your character in the form of like weather upgrades, or just increased health and increased mana. Weather upgrades, what the hell am I talking about?
I was going to say, what the hell is a weather upgrade?
Exactly. Weather upgrades are for weather abilities, which can also be used on the sim environment stage. So even though you kind of set up the environment so that enemies can be attacked by your citizens by giving them the right tools, sometimes you also want to get down and dirty yourself. And this is done by using your god powers, mostly tied to the weather. You can use rain, which is used to fertilize the land, since you can actually build more farms and feed people. You can use sun powers to create a sun guardian that can land on the earth and fight alongside the humans. Usually he's stronger than the humans, and he's good to put in a clutch situation if they're being overwhelmed by a swarm of guys. And also, you can strike the ground with lightning and just directly attack monsters. All these things, however, drain mana from your character. And if you don't keep your mana topped off, you'll find yourself unable to assist the people. But fortunately, it's pretty easy to get mana back. You just fly through a cloud formation on the map, because your avatar is kind of like a winged bird. You just fly through some clouds, and bam, your mana is restored. Now, the weird thing about this, but it's not so bad, it's just something you have to get used to, is that your resources are very finite to build. Like I said earlier, you use wood to build things. But trees don't grow back once you've taken them down. And once the trees are gone, you can't farm them again. So you can pretty much determine more or less how much wood you're going to have at the end of an environment once you've chopped all the trees down, once you get good with understanding, you know, how much you get per section of trees or whatever. And that could be a little bit dicey, though admittedly, they don't screw you completely, because if you destroy a structure, you get the wood back one to one. So there's no, like, you don't even get penalized for destroying a structure. It's just, even with that, it's very good. It made my life better, because I found myself in situations where I was like, oh crap, I'm out of wood, but I really need this magic tower. What do I do? Well, you got to destroy something. But then you find yourself wondering, what am I able to destroy? Because I love everything. I love everything I've built. What do I get rid of? And you just kind of have to take a chance and destroy something and hope it doesn't destroy your situation too much. Now, at first, I kind of found the action stages to be a little fun, but got eventually to get boring, because I felt like I wanted more abilities, but I wasn't getting them. It was just, hey, here's another mana upgrade, another health upgrade. But what I come to learn later on in the game is that once you've liberated enough areas on a specific area of the world, you'll reveal the location of the main god of the environment, the god that's, you know, pretty much trashing the area and making it uninhabitable, or trying to make it uninhabitable for humans. At that point, you are able to go to that environment, go through a rather lengthy stage. It's more like a marathon at this, I mean, a marathon at this point, and then you fight the boss at the end. And once you beat him, you get a new ability, which you can use on the action stages, which I liked. So that gives you something to pursue as you play through each of the stages. You know that at the end of a stage or area, rather, you'll get a cool new fighting ability, which you can take to the other areas. Now, you are able to leave an area whenever you want, whether it be an action stage or even the sim stage, and go to any of the other sim stages in the world once they've become available to you. So you're never really locked into an area that you might not want to deal with. You might be able to say, hey, this island area here is nice, but I'm kind of tired of dealing with it before, but I want to come back later. You can just take off, fly to another location, and start on that one and see how well you perform. And each area has its own little drama set of humans to learn to listen to as they complain and wonder, why is water water? I don't understand. You know, whatever. So, but honestly, I found this game to be rather fun. The only negative, like a general negative the game had for me, which is something you kind of just adjust to over time, is that when you are attacking in action mode, you swing with no problem. You're not, it's fluid swinging. But if you want to say, stop swinging, turn around and maneuver, there is a bit of a delay there, in that it's something you adjust to, but at first you're like, I want to, you know, stop swinging, turn around, start swinging again. But no, you actually have to actively stop swinging and then move, turn your guy around. And it's like a couple seconds of response time there that you have to account for. So you just have to be prepared to know that you can't, because you know what I'm talking about. You've played action games where you pretty much, you're still hitting the attack button while you're turning left to right. So it's almost like nothing stopped.
Yeah.
But in this game, you have to stop attacking before you attempt to turn around, or the game is not going to turn you around. You'll just be swinging in the other direction. So
that's weird.
It really is. It may have been an intentional thing for all I know, as in to say you have to deliberately turn yourself around so you can't just gung-ho mash the attack button. But it's just something that I noticed, so I wanted to state it. Platformer-wise, though, I didn't have any real issues with hopping around. I mean, at worst, the timing isn't – I mean, you might have a little bit of adjustment to the timing for jumps, but it's not, you know, broken jumping. It's not – oh, crap, I missed a jump, I'm going to blame the game. It's just, hey, this isn't Mario. This is Soul Seraph. So you'll adjust to it. It won't be a big deal. So, but honestly, I found the game to be good. It's not ActRaiser, but it doesn't need to be ActRaiser. ActRaiser is still out there on your Super Nintendo or your emulator waiting for you to play it if you really feel like you need to. But it's nice to see a company remember that a game of that style existed and decided, hey, let's see what we can do with that concept. Because I think they did a decent job with it. And it's nice to have a new game in that gameplay style to play around with.
Yeah, just from you talking about it, it sounds a lot like ActRaiser, but with added tower defense. And
exactly.
That sounds awesome.
Exactly right. It's really cool.
Well, I guess the only question left is $15 on it. What's your verdict?
I personally find it to be a buy. Worth the money.
Awesome. I will definitely have to pick this one up. This one's been on my radar since I first heard about it. I loved ActRaiser on the Super Nintendo. This game has been getting so many comparisons to ActRaiser. It'd be foolish to not acknowledge them, but I'm dying to pick this one up and give it a shot.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the other thing worth mentioning too is that, and I actually ended up looking around because I was curious in a sense, like, how other people were, what other people were thinking of, if they gave it a shot or not. And I know some people were kind of like down on some of the stuff that I talked about earlier, but they were down on enough to be like, this was not a good game. And my thought was, it's a $15 game. It did a great job for that. I'm not paying, you know, $50 for this title. The game plays great. Graphically, it's not going to blow your socks off, but it doesn't have to. It's just meant to be fun to be played. And I enjoy the visuals. They're not stellar, but they're nice visuals. I enjoy it. And the music is good, too. That's worth noting also.
Nice.
I wish Yuzo Koshiro did all of the OST, but I heard he just did the actual intro screen. But nonetheless, it's still great music. So it's a good time.
Awesome. Sounds good.
I hope so. Does it sound buy it good? Yes.
Purnell, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Don't skimp on the gym if you start and stop, because I'm going to tell you, when you finally go back, you're going to know. Oh, my God, it kicked my ass today, and I got to get back into the groove of things. Don't skip the gym if you go. There it is.
Holy shit.
Holy shit what?
Yeah, I'm kind of gradually purging my game collection over the course of the past like couple years. And I put like a good portion of my NES collection up last night, and Metal Storm is already over $100.
Damn.
I got a lot of expensive plastic that's just kind of sitting in my basement that, you know, I could just emulate it. That's what it comes down to, is just like, the more years go by, the more it's like, well, it's been X amount of years since I've, you know, touched this and put it into a system. What's the point? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to clean house too sometime.
Yeah. It's like I sold like a bunch of my Saturn games a few years ago. And
yeah.
Yeah. I made fat fucking bank on that one. But yeah, this is a pretty big one. A lot of premium NES and Super NES games available from the collection, and Genesis stuff, because I saw that the lineup on the Genesis Mini, and I was like, well, I'll just get fucking one of those. And it's never hard. Man, I can't, well, whatever. But yeah. Yeah. Don't need games that are worth $200 sitting around in my basement.
Basically. Very true.
Short. Yeah, it's just, yeah. It's better off in money form. This point.
Always true. That it is true.
Yeah.
Cash is a very positive thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just interesting that like a lot of these games I bought like 15 years ago actually appreciated in value.
Yeah, I don't think half the games I have on my shelves anymore are worth dick, because it's all like Xbox 360.
Yeah, that would be why. Yeah, like things stop having value after like the year 2002.
Yeah, nothing matters anymore.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, lots of, like, Nintendo games got expensive, Super Nintendo games got expensive, a lot of PlayStation, Dreamcast games got expensive, but after that, eh. But, yeah. It'll be a dark day. It'll be something if I start selling off my Dreamcast games. I can't imagine I'll ever get to that point.
No, nothing?
No, I love it too much, man. Love that system too much. It's just so cool.
I regret getting rid of my Dreamcast. I had one of the black Sega Sports ones.
Mine is a Japanese Dreamcast manufactured in the year 1998.
Wow, really?
Yeah, still kicking. Yeah, but
damn.
Yeah, that's like the one game collection I've actually like continued to pursue items for in recent years. But
what are you still looking for?
Really nothing at this point. I was just basically buying games. For a moment, I was like, I'm going to buy every Dreamcast game that was released in the U.S. because that's how much I love it. And then, like, I started looking at the games. And I'm like, maybe I'll just get the ones I want. Maybe I'll just get the ones that I'm interested in and skip going for, like, all the also-ran shit that I, you know, forgot about. There's not an insignificant amount of, but there's just so many neat things that are like only on Dreamcast.
That's such a cool system.
It's such a cool system. I love it. I love it dearly.
And now I miss Phantasy Star Online again.
Oh, well, good news for you.
Yeah. Still a year away, but finally. Still a year
away, yeah.
Anyway, should we talk about a game?
Let's do this. We should talk about some video games.
All right. Well, the game you're here to talk about is called Senran Kagura Peach Ball, developed by Honey Parade Games, published by XSEED and Marvelous USA, released July 9th on the Switch for $39.99. Senran Kagura has transformed into a sexy pinball game on the Nintendo Switch. Bounce your ball along the curves of a crazy theme park starring a ninja girl who thinks she's an animal. Tim, tell us about it.
My God. yeah, well, I just want to get out of the way. So it's like, yeah, so the Senran Kagura games, which I reviewed Peach Beach Splash a couple of years ago and was pretty, like, actually kind of impressed with it for being, you know, they're a smutty series of games.
Oh, yeah.
To say the least. But I was, like, pretty impressed with that game as a third-person shooter. So there was, and also as a fan of video game pinball and pinball in general, there is vested in real interest in the quality of this game and not just like, ha ha ha, let's see how ridiculous this game is. But that said, man, the setup for this game is fucking ridiculous. Yeah, it's like one of the girls is like running an arcade and has like this goop in her bathroom that turns people into animals. And like one girl goes in there and thinks it's soap and then gets it on like for the other girls, and then they all turn into different animals and think they're animals, and
oh Jesus,
that's where the fetishism is going in this one, which is fine if that's where it goes. But yeah, but then once they are animals, in order to her contingency plan, she thought that something like this might happen, is you'd have to trick them into getting on top of this specially built pinball table and then shooting them with the magic peach ball, the eponymous peach ball.
Oh, boy.
So that's the premise here of what's going on. There you go. Anyway, so
can we just take a second and appreciate how ridiculous that is?
The lengths they went to like make to give this some backstory that would quote unquote work, you know, that's it definitely like the first few minutes of the story and the setup are pretty funny just for that sake. Nonetheless. So anyways, yeah. So, there's only two tables, in this game, and they're both kind of mediocre. They have like slightly different variations, and which I mean, there's like day, twilight and night, day, dusk and evening. So it's like they just look a little bit different, have a little bit of different graphical effect, like nothing meaningful changes in the way they play. So you got two tables.
Layout changes at all?
No layout changes between the shift of day, the time of day. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah, it's just that. There's one that's an amusement park based. There's one that's kind of like a Japanese folklore base, sort of. And yeah, they're okay pinball tables. They have like a couple ramps. You know, they have ramp loops that go around one side to the other in varying capacities. They have a few targets to hit. And, you know, you get... There's different goals you have to hit and accrue to move forward on the table. And they all show up on the right side in tiny print. And you think about how, you know, real pinball tables, some of that information would be up on the little display on the back glass. But a lot of times these tables will have lots of flashing lights and stuff to kind of indicate like where you needed to shoot, like give you a vague idea of like what your goals are, like what you're trying to hit. This really doesn't have that and relies on this thing off to the side that's hard to, you know, look all the way over there. There's a reason why they put this information straight in front of you on a standard pinball table. Yeah. So what you end up doing is like you're slapping the ball around. You do like you'll spawn like little mini games on the table, not unlike, you know, other like pinball games that are purely based in the video game world, like Metroid Prime Pinball or like your Pokemon Pinball, stuff like that, where, you know, creatures will just manifest and be walking around. You have to hit them as targets, usually kind of right there in the middle. But I mean, I think
part of the reason that they end up being simple is that they end up having like so much room to work with, because you have a giant animal girl sitting in the middle of the table and taking up all this real estate, because you know, that's the main goal of the game. That's what you're shooting to do, is to remind this person they're a human and such. So yeah, like you will smack the girl is right there in the middle. She is a target. You get points for shooting the ball at her. You can, there will be certain events and moments where you will knock her down into a more prone position.
Of course there is.
And once you get to a certain point, you knock them into like an off the table mini game. So they get sucked into like a circus tent or some stuff like that. And you go back there with them. And then, yeah, it pretty much just puts you on a small, like round table, gives you two balls. And then there's like a thing in the middle you have to hit. There's variation to it. Like sometimes it's an ice cream truck, or there's, one that is like it's in the Japanese folklore one. So it's like these totem things that are stacked up. And basically you hit it. They're basically like a little bonus game. So you hit him, you score some points. And then at the end of it, once time is up, there's like a little animation where, you know, the ice cream spills on the girl's boobs in the background, or she's knocked over in some other kind of alluring prone position. Again, here we are again. So you do that three times. Then on the third time, when you go in there, when it's, oh man, I wish I could remember what the mode is called off the top of my head, but I can't. So anyway, then you go in there and you're just straight, like, you got the two paddles, same small round table, except you're just bouncing the balls off of either A, her tits, or B, her ass, depending on the situation. Just smacking it off them cheeks or those boobs, as it were. And then once you're done with that, it zooms in further, and then you're just using the paddles to smack, you know, said boob or said ass cheeks. And then finally, that is when they are then finished off, and it gets like, I don't know, you don't even see like a nipple or something like that. But, you know, that is when they are turned back into human form. And
oh my God.
Whatever. I know, these games are great.
I love it. You know, I love it.
Just like the way they do these things. But yeah, the problem is just that, like, the tables, you know, that is kind of the major goal on every table. Like, that is the centerpiece of every table. And it ends up, like, it's not like different girls give, you know, have different goals or really things play out dramatically differently. You just kind of keep the ball alive, and eventually you'll build up enough score that you'll activate these bonus games. You'll go back there, like... There isn't really like a strong table progression, like there's not a lot to shoot for, like variation of the hits. It's pretty much just mostly just aiming for the ramps. I don't want to dilute it too much, but there really isn't much more than that. They're really simple tables, just kind of meant to work around this theme of de-animalizing girls. So like in the story mode, you'll basically play up to the point where you de-animalize or rehumanize the girl, as it were, and then you move on to the next chapter. When you play in like the arcade endless mode, like you'll get up there, de-animalize them, rehumanize them, whatever, and then it just cycles back up just the same way, like through again. Like there is a multi-ball mode you can activate, which is fun. There's no like plunger to shoot the ball in with, so there's no like skill shot. The ball is just kind of unceremoniously dropped onto the table. They do have different ball types. Some are the difference is like they're lighter or heavier. I picked the one that was easiest to see, like the lightest colored one. That's what stood out to me most on the table. The darker color ones would blend in too much, so I didn't really use those. Yeah, the story mode, you can play through with different girls as your main character, so you'll get different cutscenes and different dialogues there, which is fun and, you know, like I said, funny. On the more pervy side of things, there is a, you know, I don't remember what they call it, but there's like the dress-up mode or like the intimacy mode where you can just go in there and then you have your gal there in the middle and you can put different outfits on her, which some are unlockable in the shop, and then you can pull up your floating hands and grab at her boobs and grab at her ass and do that stuff. I mean, that stuff was in I might wager it's in every one of these games, but it was
pretty much
Peach Beach Splash as well. You know, you can shoot water at them, you know, do that stuff. But, you know, looking at this in a serious, critical way, there's only five or six girls in this game. There's not that many outfits. And, like, there isn't, if you're strictly looking for, you know, that softcore anime girl stuff, like, it's definitely a step back from Peach Beach Splash. Like, yeah, and not a lot of outfits as well. But so, yeah, at the end of the day, like, I don't feel like it has enough content to, like, satisfy. Like, if this were a great pinball game, like a good pinball game, like, I would be totally into it. Like, you know, whatever the other stuff, anime girl stuff, like, I am looking for quality pinball, and it's not here. It's just like, it's okay. It's yeah. only the two tables for $40, which is a big ask. But then I feel like even if you're, you know, looking for, you know, anime girl stuff, like, there isn't enough of that either with like a smaller cast. Like, yeah, Peach Beach Splash had tons and like felt like 20, 30 girls in it, and tons of different swimsuits you could slap on them. But this just feels a lot more limited. It is technically cheaper, but I just don't feel like there is enough there to justify it for, you know, either camp, for someone looking for just the pinball or just kind of the theme of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a bummer.
Well, overall, $40. What is your official verdict?
It's too much. I like it. It would need to be cheaper, a lot cheaper, to even be considered for, like, you know, what the heck, like a try it recommendation. But 40, I think, is just too much for the amount of content that's there and the quality thereof.
That makes sense. I wish there were more tables as well. It's a bummer to hear that there's only better two. Tables.
Yeah. If they were better, or there were more of them, or they're like the mini games were more interesting. Or something, but it's just not enough there to satisfy. Like, if a pinball game has enough to hook me, like, I'll play it like tons. I spent a lot of time just last year playing Pokemon Ruby Sapphire pinball, because I hadn't played it before, but I was into it for a good month. But this, I was kind of like, okay, well, I feel like I've seen it all after not that much play. This is a bummer.
Yeah, well, can't all be winners.
They cannot all be winners.
All right. Well, Tim, always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words?
I do. Oh, speaking of girls, how about that River City Girls trailer? Man, sure people have seen that by now. That was last week. That came out like just before the 4th. That looks great. It's got some great music. I can't wait for it. I'm a sucker for River City stuff, especially, you know, Arc Systems has had that license for like years now. And I feel like this is the first like actual, like, new thing they've done with it, and not just kind of like reusing those old sprites in various ridiculous ways, you know?
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And I don't know whether WayForward approached them or they approached WayForward, but it's hopefully a match made in heaven.
All right. And next game to talk about is called Scrap Rush, developed by AcquireCore, published by P-Cube, released June 20th on Steam and the Switch for $14.99. Robots compete by gathering junk in this crazy battle. The rules are simple. Use blocks and crush your foes. Play with up to four players. Checking this one out. Royal Sefton, how are you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm alive.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's about the extent of it.
That beats the alternative. How was your fourth?
It was fun. It was a lazy day at home. I'm kind of like, I don't care about the fireworks anymore. So it's just fun to listen to all the exploding outside while I'm trying to get work done. And it's all noisy. We postponed recording the show on Thursday because it was the 4th of July. So instead we did it on Friday when people were cutting grass. So,
oh man,
noise versus noise.
Yep. Pick your poison.
How about you? How was your fourth?
It was hazardous. I had a neighbor's firework explode unexpectedly, and it popped me a good one in the face, like right below my face, like in the chin. But I was standing a good 15 feet back from this thing, and it just like let loose and got this nasty burn on my neck.
Oh, so, damn.
Yeah, it was awesome. And the thing is, the thing is, nobody was playing with like homemade fireworks. These were just, you know, as legit as they get, you know, you buy them at a fireworks stand, whatever. But yeah, it was just, you know, pretty sparkly, and all of a sudden, boom, it was just like a dynamite went off suddenly. And it was bad. Thankfully, I'm the only one who got bit by it. And it wasn't like hospital time. It wasn't that bad. It was just surprising. So
no hospital, just boo-boo.
Yeah, it was just a boo-boo.
Got a Band-Aid on it?
No, I don't.
Oh, you're too tough for Mayonnaise now?
No. I got a beard on it now. I got stubble. I'm not going to shave until this thing goes away because, ouch. So, it's like right in the danger zone. So, yeah, that's going to be bad news if I try to shave. Oh, I'm just going to wait for a while and let that finish.
Oh, Lord. That sounds like a blast. Ha, 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 ha. Ha, ha, ha. So how's Scrap Rush?
Scrap Rush, yes. Let's get on topic. I'm sorry, man. Scrap Rush is cool. When you sent it to me and said, hey, do you want to check this one out? I was like, cool, Bomberman. It's not Bomberman. I'll just let you know right now, spoiler alert, it's not Bomberman. But
okay.
It does give a lot of the same vibes, and it has a four-player battle mode that is Bomberman-esque. But different. So you play a robot. You're kind of slow moving at first. As you break out these like boxes of scrap, you can sometimes pick up power ups that might increase your push distance, your speed. And when I say push distance, it's kind of like, I know in Bomberman sometimes you could kick a bomb or something. Well, that's Scrap Rush all the time. You have the ability to push these piles of scrap either a short distance or a long distance, or if you charge it up, a really long distance. And whenever you are squaring off against other players or computer opponents, you're just trying to crush them with the scrap. Be the first to push it toward them with enough force to knock them up against a wall and squish them. And then they explode into a pile of scrap. You collect the scrap. It's kind of like your points. You hit 700 points of scrap and you upgrade, and you know, it's kind of like transformation, and you look badass and all this stuff. And so it kind of has that Bomberman-esque look, but it's more like Bomberman meets Wall-E, for lack of a better way to put it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the play modes are a little varied. So there's three different types of battle mode when you're playing with up to four players. You can do this one where you have these tiles, like these team tiles, where you deposit scrap, or you can go to the opponent's team tile and steal their scrap. And you try to bump them off as much as you can. And when you do so successfully, then you are able to get half of the scrap they're carrying. I think it's about half. Same risk applies that you can have half your scrap stolen from you if you're smashed. So be careful. And, you know, you play until the timer runs out, and the team tile that has the most scrap is the winning team. Or you can do, like, survival mode, which is kind of pretty typical Bomberman-esque sort of squaring off, where you just have a finite number of lives, and you have to be the last one standing. So you kind of got a free-for-all mode there. And then there's also some single player and co-op stuff too. So there's this challenge mode, and you have 10 levels, concluding with a boss fight, and you can do that solo, or you can do it with up to four players, couch style. And after you play it through normal mode, it unlocks hard mode. There's also this survival mode. It's single player only, where you just have an infinite number of opponents. And as you clear a wave, eventually it regenerates the arena. And if you are clumsy like me, you'll let the arena kill you because it shows you where all the blocks are coming, and then crunch, you get squashed, and then game over.
And then you're the one who is scrap.
Exactly. So yeah, it's very fun, and I think comparisons to Bomberman are just inevitable. The reviews that I've seen coming from other folks that have played it, they all mention the same game in reference to what it's like, but it's not exactly like that. However, being like Bomberman, I will say that the number one reason that I would get killed is because of dumb shit I would do. And that's exactly what happens with Bomberman.
Yes.
Oops, I planted a bomb and I pinned myself in a corner. Oops, I'm dead. Or oops, I ran toward that pile of scrap that has an enemy on the other side of it pushing it toward me. Oops, I'm dead. You know, that sort of thing would happen a lot. So, yeah, it's not incorrect to make that comparison, but the playstyle is quite different, and yeah, it's a real kick.
Did you get to play with the kids at all?
I did. They enjoyed it. We did a couple different battle modes. We unlocked a couple of the colors. The thing that's kind of frustrating is that I felt like we didn't get enough stuff unlocked, and you have to play through some of the modes to unlock more stuff. So it's kind of like a hybrid shop and achievement model, where you have to unlock certain things to be able to buy them. and you accumulate scrap as you play, and that counts toward kind of like your currency for buying these things. So, you know, you may have the 10,000 or 15,000 scrap to get in a skin or a certain other unlock or a level, but you still got to unlock other things or play through certain things to be able to do that, right? So it's you know, and then that's fine. I'm not complaining. I suppose it'd be too easy to game the system and just unlock everything, you know, with some sort of a friendly versus, you know, or something. The other thing is that I kind of wish in the survival modes and early on in the single player / co-op campaign that you'd be better rewarded if you get a quick clear time. That doesn't seem to be an option. Instead, you are rewarded for hanging on as long as possible and accumulating more scrap. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It'd just be kind of cool to see it the other way around.
Yeah.
So, you know, between that and some of the game modes not being necessarily speedrunner friendly, like you have exactly 3 minutes to play through the game. That's just the dynamic of the game, which you need to be aware.
Yeah. But overall, $15 on this one. What are your thoughts?
I think for $15, it's pretty much a buy. I mean, there's so many good things to say about and so few bad things. Like, I even felt like I would complain that the AI seems kind of brain dead or slow, but there's still a hard mode to unlock afterward, and there are times when it caught me. So I can't even really make that claim. Just because it was, you know, relatively easy, I don't feel like it was too easy, and I feel like it's very playable. You know, you get a few people together, it's a lot of fun. So for $15, I think it's a great game.
Nice. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. I encourage you to check it out.
I will quite possibly pick this up on the Switch. I don't know if they have plans for PlayStation or Xbox, but I would love to see it on there, maybe with some online crossplay. Maybe.
That would be cool. Yeah, so it's just Steam and Switch right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
is there any online to it, or no?
No, not that I saw. Mm. But, you know, the thing that's cool about playing it on Steam, or I should say playing it on a Windows computer, is you can always use something like Parsec and invite people to play with you over the network that way.
True.
So, yeah, in that sense, you could kind of set something up, but I didn't see an option for, like, online multiplayer. I think it's pretty much only couch.
That's a bummer, but it makes sense. It's only a $15 game, and online play isn't the easiest thing in the world to make work, so.
Yeah, yeah, but I do have to plug Parsec unrelatedly just because I've had such great success with it. I would recommend to anybody who's trying to kind of retrofit, you know, a couch-only game to play online. Seems to work just perfectly.
I'll have to check that out, and we'll have to play something together.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Royal, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting about games. Do you have any final words?
Hey, kid, I'm a computer. Stop all the downloading.
I like that your phone answered that, too.
Help, computer.
All right, and finally tonight, we've got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, you doing all right?
You're on a short one. Are you excited?
Yeah, so excited.
You're going to try keeping this bitch under an hour. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. It all comes down to you, but we'll see. Fingers crossed.
I mean, look, I could summarize it in like 5 words. But I feel like we owe Kemco a little more than that.
A little more. So how was your weekend?
Pretty good. Largely streaming Skyrim. I'm on a different build now, doing a necromancer build now on a legendary, call it the Army of Dankness.
Nice. How many characters do you have in Skyrim right now?
Oh, geez. Well, I'm on my third one for streaming. In total, I'd say like probably 20 to 25.
Jesus Christ. I was expecting like 7, 8.
No.
Holy shit, man.
I literally ran out of saves on my primary account, my US account, where it was like, you need to delete some of this stuff or you need to like not play this anymore. So I like, because they only allot a certain amount of save files, I guess, or a certain amount of memory for save files for Skyrim or something like that. And so like,
I don't know. I've never hit the capacity of what Skyrim allows. So I don't
exactly,
know.
Exactly. Yeah. So I deleted a couple of characters and trimmed down a lot of my, like, you know, I removed all the auto saves because every game has 3 auto saves and all this other stuff. And at the end of it, I still filled it up and I ended up having to start building them on my UK account.
Oh my god, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I play that game a lot, and you know, anybody that wants to can catch me doing it on the Twitch.
And where is that at again?
Twitch.tv/LierExaggerate.
Nice. That's around,
yeah, like the character in Earthbound. LierExaggerate.
And if you haven't played Earthbound, you should probably do that too.
Yeah, you should do that. I don't think I'm going to play Earthbound on stream yet, but...
No?
Nah, right now it's all Skyrim, because I only have my PS4 to stream from, so...
All Skyrim all the time. All right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, should we talk about the game you're here to talk about?
Yeah, I guess so we don't go over that hour.
No, I'm sure we're going to break it, but who knows? We'll see. Final game to talk about tonight is called As Divine Dios, developed by XCreate, published by Chemco, released July 4th on the Switch for $12.99. When a spate of disturbances erupts across the globe and an ever-spreading merc threatens to destroy it, the deity of As Divine himself takes up his cause to save the world he created with his own hands. Suffering from an unfortunate loss of his own divine powers, is there any hope he can succeed? Chris, any hope?
I mean, the game has an easy mode, so some hope. Or actually, if you really get stuck, you can just purchase any one of the number of like experience enhancers and things like that that they sell separately that you can download for the game.
Yeah,
because this is one of those. As Divine Dios for Nintendo Switch. So basically, as you may know, I reviewed As Divine Hearts 2, which, given the similarity of the titles and the fact that the world is called As Divine, this game is related to that game.
Shocking,
except what's even more shocking is that it is in no way related to that game. It's As Divine, but in name only. The reason I say that is because, well, As Divine Hearts 1 and As Divine Hearts 2 have a thread going through them. Like, there's the same characters, you know, a couple maybe different things. But, you know, in 2 years of development, which is in Chemco XCreate years, is like an eternity. As Divine Dios, actually, if you look back through the original releases, this one actually came out very shortly after As Divine Hearts. So it was probably developed right around the time Antiquia Lost came out, which that one, they both came out in like 2015, and As Divine Hearts came out in 2014. But As Divine Hearts 2 came out in like 2017, a little later. So
you know your Chemco games all too well.
I have to research them because it's sometimes hard to describe these games as being different because I'm about to get into how it's the same. But it's important to note how it's different because I've mentioned it ever since I was reviewing these things on the 3DS. Every Chemco XCreate game that comes out tends to improve on the prior game, usually by adding features, sometimes by just cleaning up the graphics a little bit. But I mean, that's to say, the games that are released in the US, for instance, there's 5 Alphadia games in Japan. We got one. Yeah, we got the first one and it's on 3DS, but they have like, yeah, they have 5 of them, including, well, 6 if you count Alphadia Genesis. So you see where I'm going with this. Yeah. I'm only able to like trace it through the US releases. So this game just came out. However, I would actually say that in the general Chemco timeline, this game is to be judged based on its proximity to the original As Divine Hearts and Antiquia Lost, which is also available on Switch and I've reviewed before. I think it just recently came out on Xbox, right?
Think so.
I think we reviewed that, yeah. So in general, this game is like all the Chemco XCreate games that are the sprite based entirely, that kind of have this 32-bit look to them. Characters are pretty detailed. I say that because that's in opposition to Dragon Sinker and what's that one called? Alvestia Chronicles or something like that.
Oh, Alvestia Chronicles.
Alvestia Chronicles, thank you. It's hard to get these titles straight. But the ones
there are
that
a lot
are,
of them.
Yeah, the ones that are like really 8-bit, this is not one of those. Nor is it like the Revenant Saga and Revenant Dogma, which are 32-bit sprites, but then jump into cinematic full 3D battles. This one is, like I said, to be lumped along with As Divine Hearts and Antiquia Lost. So it follows a completely different story than As Divine Hearts, so I would consider it maybe a side story. But I actually don't. It takes place in a planet called what the frick is this game called now? As Divine. I was about to say Alta Vista again. Which, nobody's seen Alta Vista in years. So As Divine. So it is in this planet, but it doesn't really make any references to the events or characters apart from the fact that there are deities. And deities can take human shape, or in the case of, As Divine Hearts, the shape of a cat. I actually took screenshots of the world maps and compared them because, Dragon Quest did this where, between Dragon Quest 1 and 2, they actually do have, consistent maps and totally different maps. So they just made a whole different game and just called it As Divine. So it follows the deity of the world. That is to say, basically God. Has become a, silver-haired, just kind of generic RPG dude character. And he's investigating this thing called Merc, which is at first seemed like an analogy to pollution or something like that. Cause he's like, humans are responsible for the Merc and all this other stuff. But you go around this place and there's no machinery whatsoever. So I'm kind of how did they do this in the first place? But, the Merc, they do the thing where, and a lot of the Chemco X Create games do this where they come up with cute little stories for why, monsters attack you and things like that. They always try to explain with lore, these basic JRPG mechanics, which I always find that adorable. And anyway, so, he teams up with a fairy underling and, it's one of the Chemco X Create kind of things where every character just kind of has one or two personality traits. So your dude is an all-knowing god who's stuck as a human. That's pretty much it. There's nobody that's really confused about anything. There are no strictly human characters in this game. They're all four characters that end up joining you are some kind of, mystical deity-like or, kind of a second-tier deity, that looks like a human. So there's, interestingly, in the narration, there's nobody to really serve as, the audience. You know how when you have an all-knowing being, you always have to have somebody that doesn't know anything so that person then explains everything so that the audience kind of knows. Yeah, there's no stand-in for the audience, really. The guy just kind of says stuff and everybody's like, yeah, we already know that. And that's just kind of his whole personality is just explaining stuff. I think it's kind of funny because the first character that you run into is an overly chipper, anime girl. And, she's actually lived on the planet for something 200 years, and hasn't been wherever else they live, in a while. And so she's just perpetually a child. And she, I guess, just keeps making friends with generations of this one town. And so everybody knows her and protects her and stuff. And so it's funny that, in the first town, your guy's treated like a hoodlum. Because even though he's God, everybody's like, this, I don't like this guy. He seems shady. His shirt is open. That's scandalous.
No.
He has a little man cleavage. It's true.
Nice.
And so anyways, the game is cute. It's a little more serious, I think, than As Divine Hearts, which is interesting. It's well written. I actually quite enjoy it. The only, but when it comes to Chemco X Create, really what it's all about are the mechanics. It's all about what the game offers that, that makes you want to play it. So for me, the thing that, they kind of introduced in this era, I don't even remember if it was in As Divine Hearts, but it was definitely in As Divine Hearts 2 and Antiquia Lost and, those kind of things. But the gambling system, wherein you get random tickets or points from an enemy. And by the way, they always have a name for the points. So, they're holy points in As Divine Hearts 2. In this game, they're just called... they're just called As Divine Dios Points ADP. So this was clearly an earlier experiment in that they decided not to hide behind the lore on this. They're just like, you want this. And that's how you get, like, you know, better weapons and things like that that you can gamble for. Of course, it's got the protection system where you can't save and load. They make you save before you play the game so that they can override it. So you have to be content with what you've got. It's a little more basic. Like, there's no way to get, like, you know, it's just basically weapons that you get from this sort of thing. And this game does have the mechanic whereby if you have one sword and then you find a stronger sword, you equip that stronger sword, you can have that stronger sword consume the weaker sword and turn it into experience points for that sword.
Yeah, so, I like that stuff.
Yeah, it's a little, you know, it's early in this game. The only thing I noticed about it is that, you know, that's different than the other games, is that it's a little less forgiving. That is to say, so anytime a weapon that you absorb has a quality about it, let's say it poisons the enemy, and each aspect is rated 1 to 100, like it's a percentage thing. So if the poison aspect of a sword is like 12, then that means there's a 12% chance it'll poison the enemy. And basically, once a weapon has that aspect at a certain level, you can transfer that aspect in, you know, it destroys the weapon that you're doing, but you can take your stronger sword and then, you know, put that poison on it, effect on it, if it's above a certain level. Well, on the usual games of this ilk, it's like, you know, 30% or whatever higher. So if poison is at 30%, you can transfer that poison to your new sword from your old sword. And in this game, it's actually 50%, which is considerably higher. So you end up like kind of like collecting all these poison swords so that you can like kind of raise the percentage on one poison sword before you transfer the power over. And then you end up like having just this mess of like 12 pages of swords that you're, and you know, the way this game drops swords, you're pretty much guaranteed to have so many, but that's okay, because like I said, if that's an aspect that you like, it's certainly in this game. And that is one that I like. The only thing that's kind of different from this one, and it's in neither As Divine Hearts nor Antiquia Lost, is that the menu system is completely different. Like, it's just, it's like, I guess they decided, you know, because normally it's like about 10 icons, and each one has nice bubbly letters across it. It says save, load, menu, you know, or options and status. This one only has this field, a 4x4 field, so 16 different things. All of these options are just icons. However, when you go over the icon, it actually has this, like, it has text across the top of the screen that describes what it is. Hmm. So I'm like, why not put it in the picture? Why not put a word on the icon so that it, like, you know, and plus the save and load look exactly alike. It's a parchment with a quill pen, and the save one has an arrow pointing towards the parchment, and the load one has the same colored arrow but pointing away from the parchment. And so it's really easy, if you aren't sitting there reading the top of the screen, to be like, am I saving or am I loading? And you know, because it takes you to the exact same screen, you know, and only just the little thing says save or load, it's like, I can see this one being very confusing. Yeah. So clearly that's something they went away from. They went right back to the original menu style for all the rest of the game. So that's just a little hiccup in this chapter. But yeah, apart from that, like I said, it's got the gambling system. It's got the weapons eating weapons system. It actually has the Unity system, which allows you to combine attacks from different characters and do like kind of these super attacks if you have them charged up. This game has limit breaks, which is something they kind of included in later games. And again, I'm saying later, but I mean like 1 year later.
Yeah.
the late era Kemco X Creator RPG. And yeah, like, you know, it's just got, it has in-game stats, like total enemies destroyed, you know, total walking stuff. But unlike As Divine Hearts 2, you don't get anything for reaching any kind of goals. That's one thing I appreciated about As Divine Hearts 2 and, like, Legend of the Tetrarchs, although that's not an X-Create game, but I'm just saying. Yeah. So it's, like I said, lore wise, it kind of stands on its own. It's not really connected to any of the Asdivine Hearts. There is a, there are like little cameos, like Felix, the cat that is the deity in Asdivine Hearts 1 and 2, actually occasionally like peeks up from the background in battles. And like, you know, you just, you see little glimpses of like Asdivine Hearts, one. Cool. In this, yeah, so they clearly, they consider it a family, you know, a family of games, but don't go into this game thinking that you're going to get anything but the most basic of, like, world lore from Asdivine Hearts.
Gotcha. So overall, yeah. $13 on this one, what do you think?
$13, I mean, that's, I always say that's worth it for Chemco X Create RPG. They're great products. I like to think of them a little bit as, so if JRPGs are cocaine, then Chemco X Create RPGs are meth. they're a little cheaper and there's a lot more available. And if you're an addict, then they'll do the job. So
Jesus.
Hey, you're talking to somebody who has no teeth when it comes to JRPG addiction. So,
oh God.
You know, and add Skyrim and all that.
No, but, seriously.
Yeah, no, it's like all the Chemco RPGs. I mean, this one isn't the best. It's not the newest. And, you know, who knows? They might have just released it because it's another game that has, you know, out-of-game purchases. You know, things like, you know, it's like between $2 and $5 for whatever. And I think if you bought, like, everything, then your game will be extremely easy and you would have paid about $30.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, you don't actually need any of that stuff. The game's got so many difficulty levels. Like, but I will say, I actually did purchase a DLC for Legend of the Tetrarchs. And so, you know, that it has appeal. Sometimes if you get into this game, you find that it's a little hard, and you're like, well, I just want to, you know, lessen that challenge level a little bit. Then you can just go purchase something.
I've bought them before, too. They definitely serve their purpose if you want them to.
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting because... yeah, some of the games that Chemco released on the Switch don't have that, so I don't know. Like, the original Asdivine Hearts doesn't have out-of-game purchasing. And I don't think Dragon Sinker does either, but I'm not sure. Either way, yeah, I think this is a definitely a worthy chapter in the, you know, in the encyclopedia of Chemco X Create games that come out on Switch. Like I said, I would set it right next to Asdivine Hearts and Antiquia Lost. It's not the latest and greatest, but if you are into Chemco X Create RPGs, this is just another great one. So go ahead and get it.
Sounds good.
All right.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Chris, thanks again for coming on, doing your thing. Thanks again to Purnell, Tim, and Royal for all coming on and doing their thing as well. 4 people, 4 reviews. Not bad, huh?
Heck yeah.
We did break an hour, though, so...
Ah, well, I knew it.
Ah, well. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
I don't know. Don't do meth, kids.
normal than the dollar of a frog. I'm a target party, I'm an alien in the bog. I'm just like my foggy fishman in the hooded cloak. I'm just like my enemies, yes, I will make them broke. I need some new songs so I can trouble them high. When I do my ass strike, my